Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Obi Young, president of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and director for the studios from Orlando, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone. This is Obi Young with Managing Safety. Today, we're in Orlando, Florida, and our guest today is Mike Gaffney. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Obi. Thank you for having me.
The other day, we were over at the Orlando Flight Standards District office, and they have an end-of-the-month program there for the CFI Special Emphasis Program, which you're part of. And Mike was one of the presenters there, and he was speaking on transitioning of students with from the CFI student to the CFI, working CFI. And what did you really call this? It was tips for the transition or what?
Yeah, Obi, this was a presentation to budding and wannabe flight instructors, kids that were coming through the system trying to become flight instructors, and it was aimed towards helping them figure out how do they take on their first students in a professional manner after spending so many years and so many hours training to be a flight instructor.
And certainly, Mike, you have got background to do this. I guess currently you're with Flight Logistics Consulting. Is that the name of your company?
It's Flight Logics Consulting.
Flight
yes.
Logics Consulting, okay. And you're a technical consultant for many different things, and you work with SAFE, the SAFE organization?
Correct.
And I remember a couple of months ago we were in Atlanta talking about flight training and promoting flight training, and that was exciting. And by day, you have another job. You're with AAR Airlift, is that right?
That's correct. I'm the director of logistics for AAR Airlift down in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, Florida, right. And I guess some of the points that we were talking about in your presentation the other day, like I said, when I heard that, I said, I've got to get you on the radio because we need to share this information with existing instructors and instructors that are coming along. You said teaching people to fly is like playing football. What do you mean by that?
Well, playing football is a strategic sport. Everybody needs to know what their position is. Everybody needs to know where the goal line is. And everybody needs to know the rules. And one of the things that has evolved in time is that when we teach people to fly, especially at non-141 flight training programs, people come in and they get flight instructors and they start learning to fly without really knowing what the game plan is. And they don't really know where they are in the continuum of the goal line, which is getting their certificate passed.
Right. And when you say 9-141, and 141, for those of you out there, that's an approved school. And 9-141 is Part 61, which is not approved school. And it doesn't mean that one is better or worse than the other one. It's just a term that the FAA has given to different flight training methodologies, but I guess some people would say is it's more structured in many cases under 141 than it is under 61, but that doesn't mean that those 61 can't be just as structured. And I think that's part of your program because you talked about, are you the director of training for your student? Now, you've got one person teaching one or two people, and he's the director of training. What do you mean by that?
Well, the flight instructor has to take the responsibility for bringing that student along. The student's never done this before. They don't understand the language, they don't understand the terminologies, and they don't really know where they are on the football field. They don't know what yard line they're on.
Okay.
And it's really it's very important for a professional flight instructor to constantly be letting them know, give them a syllabus, use a syllabus, and then show them this is where you are, and this is the number of hours you have, and this is where everybody else is. So you're right about where you should be at this point in time. That keeps people motivated, because when they get lost in this field, they're writing checks, you know, to the flight instructor every week, and they're renting airplanes, and they don't know, they lose sight of where they are and how long it's going to take them until the flight instructor is going to release them. I found that this strategy of teaching people to fly on a syllabus, even if it's Part 61 training, is very effective in terms of producing a safe student.
So you're going from the 50-yard line to the 40-yard line down to the field goal or to the goal when you actually obtain that plateau, whether it's a student pilot or the cross-country or the final private pilot licenses. You've spoken many times on complex airplanes and the challenges of that. Mike, let's talk just a little bit about that.
Okay. The, you know, we have a couple traditional, definitions of complex aircraft in aviation in general. In general, we've, over the last 50 years, we've talked about complex aircraft as having, you know, a landing gear lever or cowl right. flaps or a prop control. And really the complex aircraft are today have technically advanced panels, they have digital autopilots, they have GPS units, and there's a whole language worth of technology that has to be taught to the student in order for them to truly master the aircraft.
So when you're talking about complex airplane, you're not talking about the FAA definition of what it takes to do that. It's the whole complexity of the new airplanes in the system, the environment, the glass cockpits, and that kind of stuff.
Well, I think it actually involves both. One of the aspects of learning to fly is mastery of technology, and whether that technology is a hydraulic system or an electro-pneumatic motor, which is going to move landing gear, or whether it's going to be, you know, a complex autopilot tied into a GPS, which is getting downloading information off of a satellite, the student needs to understand those pieces and how they work. They don't have to be, you know, an electrical engineer, and they don't have to understand Ohm's law, but they need to understand the electrical system, because that's the only way they're going to be able to diagnose their way out of a problem further down in their training.
You were talking about Ohm's law, and Mike was showing me some equipment here with is that a PDA? Is that what you call that?
It's called a tablet.
A tablet. And we had talked with Bob Rasky a couple of weeks ago about the new technology in the airlines with United Airlines and Continental and the new pilots of the future. And you're talking a little bit about the transition from being a CFI student to a CFI, working CFI. What would you say was some general advice points that you made the other day about that?
Well, I think in terms of the general concept of that is you have to develop your own style of teaching. Okay? You have to take the best of what you've learned, and you have to figure out how to compress that down into bits of information that you can give to the student at the right time. So timing is huge. You have to be able to modify that style to different students who have different learning environments. They have different learning styles. And I've got a couple students right now, one of them's 17, one of them's 18. I also have a guy that's an F-16 fighter, and he's trying to go off and get his ATP, and he hasn't flown a general aviation airplanes in 20 years.
Wow.
So you use a totally different style for each of those types of students.
Right. So you're adapting the program to the individual applicant that you're working with, is what you're saying then.
That's correct.
Okay. And I noticed you said something about repeating back or something.
Yes. I think that one of the things that's very important is that you've got to get the student to begin to be a teacher back to you so that you can make sure that they understand what it is that you've conveyed to them. So what you do is when you're teaching something, you have to be very passionate, first of all. And you have to set a good example. Those are the common denominators. But when you're providing information, you got to keep it simple first. And then you got to give them an example of how that information is going to be useful. Then you ask them the question, say, okay, let's suppose, just to make sure that you understand, let's suppose that you are at this airport here and you point on a sectional chart. Okay? And you're going to get ready to take off that airport. And let's say that, you know, it's a 5,000 foot runway and you look down to the end and you lay out a scenario and then you get them to feedback. And an experienced instructor begins to learn to know when their student has grasped a concept, and you could see the light bulb, the proverbial light bulb, go off. And I think that that's very important. A young instructors tend to be, you know, they're going in, they have this great big thick book with their flight instructor, you know, trying to pass their flight instructor check ride.
Right.
And what they're doing is they're basically doing rote. They're saying, okay, tell me about, you know, this regulation. Okay, and then they go up and they say, this regulation, blah, blah, blah. And what that doesn't teach them when we're training flight instructors to get ready to go out into the world is to how to interact with the interpersonal skills. We don't have a good mentor program. And, you know, those flight instructors are basically as good as their flight instructors were. They have no style of their own.
Right. And so whether you're working with the new pilot or the pilot with the F-15 or F-16 background or whatever, there's some key points that you made there. And These are the teaching points that you'd started on, which really grabbed my attention. And the first one was, of course, being passionate, setting a good example, and keeping it simple first. And we'll come back in just a few minutes. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back and talk with Mike Gaffney on managing safety here in Orlando, Florida, and talking about teaching tips from transitioning from the instructor-student to the instructor-employee. We'll be right back.
Now, let's rejoin O.B. Young and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Hello, and welcome back to Managing Safety. This is O.B. Young with Mike Gaffney, and we ended up the last session with the teaching points from transitioning from a student instructor to a teaching instructor, an employee, and we had covered being passionate, setting a good example, and keeping it simple first. Let's go back to setting the good example.
Okay, first of all, well, let's go back to the very first one, the be passionate.
All right.
And,
that's the most important, right?
Be passionate. You have to be excited about what you do. And flight instructors that are in training and suddenly get hired for their first job, no one sits them down and gives them that pep talk that they really need. They're only going to be as passionate as their internals, and their own excitement leads them to be, or they're only going to understand passion as their own flight instructors have been to them. And so one of the things that we really need to do is to do a better job when we're training flight instructors to understand passion and how important that is in keeping a student motivated. So I always set that as my teaching advice point one to flight instructors.
Right.
My second one, set a good example. And we've all heard the adage, you know, do as I do and, you know, but do as I say and, you know, walk the talk. And, but what that really means is, you know, you can't sit there and tell a student, say, you know, go check the weather. When they sit there and they see you, it's like, huh, he doesn't go check the weather.
Right.
So, and use your checklist when you don't use the checklist and you
right.
don't enforce using the checklist. You've got to set the good example. And so I think that that's very, very important. And a student has to learn that early on. They have to look up to their flight instructor as someone that is, you know, not godlike or anything like that, but someone that they view as a mentor. They look up to and they say, I want to be like this person. And I think that that's very important because if you set that stage early on in the training, it carries with them throughout their career. And that's one of the things that we're struggling with is how do we keep people, young people especially, that start flying in the flying field.
Well, I think your next point probably covers that, but I thought all flight instructors walked on water and ATPs jumped tall buildings. But, you know, one of the things you started off here was keeping it simple at first. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you explain a complex topic, you have to keep it simple. A great example is I do a ground school session with each of my students because they're at different points in their
right.
training. So I do one on Monday night and one on Tuesday night. And I have a syllabus laid out for them. And I sat down with their parents, and their parents know what that syllabus is. Okay, and they also know how much everything is going to everything's going to cost. So when the student comes in, they know what they're going to cover. So we sit down and let's say we're going to talk about a pedostatic system. Okay,
right.
No 17-year-old, and in many cases, no 45-year-old knows what a pedostatic system is unless it's explained to them by a flight instructor or in an aviation community. So when you start talking about it, you have to keep it very simple, because if you start giving them very complex definitions and all these kind of things, they're going to get lost. They're going to get fatigued.
And I guess you're using the syllabus. It goes back to the original point you had about the football field, so you know exactly where you are on the football field. And, of course, you brought up the money. And, of course, in the United States, it's incredibly cost-effective to learn to fly in the United States compared to a lot of places in the world. We had some people over from England here a few weeks ago on managing safety, and they were talking about how lucky we were, the freedoms we have, and to be able to do it so affordable. So don't think it's something that you can't afford, because it's certainly affordable and certainly but you need to, whether you're in training in Part 61 or 141, you need to get with the right instructor and develop this football approach or your syllabus and a plan of action for each lesson, similar to what you were just describing there. What should some of the things we'd be look out for? What are some of the pitfalls?
Well, I think the pitfalls is that flight instructors tend to get into a rut, especially when they're in a hurry, when they're when they've got a 12 or 14 students that they're carrying,
right.
And then they get into this thing, okay, you go out in pre-flight, and I'm going to finish doing this logbook, and then the next thing you know, they're walking out to the aircraft. They may or may not have actually looked at the syllabus. They may or may not be carrying their plan of action in their hand with them, and they may or may not have actually briefed the student. So the student gets out there, and he's sitting there thinking, I wonder what we're going to do today. And then and the instructor's climbing in the airplane. All right, let's go. Well,
right.
Let's go where?
Right.
Okay. And a lot of times, if the student it doesn't have the guts to communicate that, then all, the next thing you know, it's like, okay, let's stay in the pattern. Okay.
So there's a student responsibility along with the instructor responsibility. And I guess that needs to be very clear right up front when you're doing the introductory talk with each one of the students that they're expected to vocalize concerns and questions.
Yeah. So here's an example that, my philosophy on teaching someone to fly is you have to teach them to fly at as many different airport environments as you can. So when I take off out of Merritt Island Airport, okay, today's lesson, we're going to go over to Titusville Airport. So let's do a 91103. Let's pull the AFD. Let's pull the airport facility directory and look at the airport diagram for Titusville. Okay, and let's do everything we have to do. Let's look at runway lengths. Let's look at our aircraft performance. Okay, now let's go there. Now the next lesson, guess what? We're not going to go to Titusville the next time. We're going to go to Melbourne. And then the next time after that, we're going to go over to Kissimmee. Okay, and so what you're trying to do is rather than get them in this rut of everything feels like Titusville or everything feels like Merritt Island, what you're doing is you're taking them through the process, showing them a good example of how you research a new airport you're going to, and you actually take them there. You take them, they're talking to a different controller and a different environment and different kinds of airspace, and so as their lessons go on, by the time they're ready to start their cross countries, they've been to 8 or 9 or 10 different airports. And this is a very effective way to gain the confidence of a student. And so the other thing that I've done, with my students is, their first solo, I sold them at their home airport. That's the airport they've done the most takeoff and landings. They're the most familiar with the, what it feels like to be at the right altitudes on downwind and base and final. As soon as they get done doing that, the next thing I do is I take them to the next airport and I take them up to Titusville. And then what we do is we do work on that next lesson and the next supervised solo. I climb out of the airplane at Titusville. I work out the deal with the Titusville Tower. So now all of a sudden the student has had two first solos at two different airports.
Right.
Then I'm going to take them to Melbourne and I'll do the same thing at Melbourne. By the time you get a student now at 15, 16 hours and they've had three different first solos at three different airports, you've got a student now that's ready to move into cross countries with some confidence under their belt.
Mike, we're about halfway through these points here and I would like to make sure that we cover all these here. So, let's pick up the pace a little bit and talk about some of these. I guess these are points that we need to make sure that we watch out for, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Some holdbacks, if you could cover those.
Okay, very good. One of them is student overload. And every student has their own ability or their aptitude to be able to learn something on any given day. And of course, that's driven by stress. It's driven by school workloads or work home environments. And the instructor has to be watchful of that. And so one of the things I've communicated to my students, I said, look, I can sit here and I can talk to you for 4 hours straight about any given topic because I've been doing this for so long. But it's very important that some days you're just tired. And it's okay for you to look at me and say, hey, Mike, you know what? I'm a little tired today. Can we pick up the next time?
Right.
And once they figure that out, then, I haven't wasted 2 hours or 45 minutes.
That's that two-way communications once again.
Exactly. And, very important.
And that falls right into your point 7, gradually handing them a little bit more and more And they take the responsibility for each one of those points, something like that.
Correct. And I think this isn't very important. When you first start taking a student, let's say with 8 hours, into the traffic pattern, okay, you know, it's very difficult for a student with that number of hours, whether they're 17 years old or whether they're 57,
right,
to be able to manage all the things necessary. So you're handling the radios, okay? You're nudging them along on the checklist, maybe even pulling it out themselves, acting as that second crew member, okay? And then you're reminding them, okay, make your radio call. You're on base now. Now, do you see that traffic over there? And so you're asking them these questions. Then the next lesson, say, okay, now today you're going to handle the radio calls. And what you're doing is you're spoon-feeding them the responsibility.
Right.
To the point where then you're crossing your arms saying, okay, now today I'm going to be a passenger. And I want you to pretend that I've never been up in an airplane before. I'm your best buddy or whatever, and you're taking up for the first time. So I want you to remember everything. And so then what you're doing is just they're giving you the feedback now. Do they remember everything? Are they pulling the checklist? Are they making the radio call on downwind at the the non-towered field?
Right.
So I think that that's the responsibility. Now, my point number 8 is praise them first. Sometimes lessons just don't go the way they want or you want. And they know it, okay? Very seldom. I mean, I've had students before that honestly, darn near scared me on this lesson, and
yeah,
they thought they did well.
Right.
Okay, so now you've got an ego problem you have
right
to manage with. But the average pilot, you know, is going to have a couple of rough landings.
Right, good days and bad days.
And so what you have to do is you got to find the good things they did. You know what? Today we wasn't, you know, probably like you and I wanted it to be. But you know what? You handled the radio real well. You remembered your checklist on downwind. I thought that was excellent. So next time, let's work on smoothing out the landing. And so then what you do, you let them walk away from the lesson feeling good. Not an unrealistic feeling good, okay? Because sometimes if someone's dangerous, you got to tell them
sure,
you have to figure out the right way to say, hey, maybe you should go get a jet ski or something.
Okay. All right. I've heard you can teach monkeys to fly, but some people would debate that a little bit.
I certainly would.
And that gets back to the logic, and you're saying thinking logical ideas together. And what do you mean linking logical ideas together?
Well, what I mean by that is when you look at the regulations take your 14 CFR 91 regulations. There's a lot of aspects of the regulations that seem to be random, single isolated points. But what you can do is you can group those things together. So a common one that I do in preparation is I talk about 10,000 feet, the magic 10,000 feet. And I talk about what are the three things that you need to understand that change in the regulations at 10,000 feet. Well, first of all, we know that you need a mode C transponder above 10,000 feet.
Right.
Okay. And we know that, that the visibility and the VFR minimums change at 10,000 feet. It goes from being 3 miles of visibility to 5 miles of visibility. Okay. Well, why are those related? And if you were just to sit down and read the regulation book, you'd never realize they're related. But
sure,
there's one linking element between those two things. The speed also changes so that you can go faster than 250 knots. So if you talk to the student and you teach it that way and say, above 10,000 feet, the speed limit of 250 knots is gone. So now suddenly you've got someone up there doing 400 knots.
Sounds like one of the levels of learning there instead of rote.
Exactly. And so because you've got people up there going so fast, you need more visibility. So they change the VFR minimums. And now ATC wants to be able to keep an eye on that. And so they've got the mode C things as well. So there's a perfect example of linking.
Right. Let's get on. We've got just a couple of more points to make here. We're speaking with Mike Gaffney, who is speaking about teaching points from transitioning from an instructor student to an instructor employee. And Mike, we're going to finish up. I think we've got two or three more points to cover here. And so if we could go ahead and start teaching you early in the process. Now, how early is early?
Well, what I'm talking about here is getting them involved in the scenario. And what we tend to do is we end to teach a private pilot, teach an instrument pilot, teach a commercial pilot, and then all of a sudden when they decide to go for a CFI, we start seeing, okay, now you teach me. And so what I really believe is that we need to start having them teach us back.
Sure.
So you involve them in the process. Say, okay, I want you to explain to me the items on the checklist today, and I want you to tell me why are we checking car, Pete?
Sounds like right out of the psychology book.
And I'll be gosh darn if they do it, they will never forget it.
Right.
If you involve them, they understand.
Now you do something with your students different to some people. I guess it's the technology and the day. What are some of the ways you stay in contact with your students?
Well, one of the things I do, I send out emails to them, and I send them links to different pages that I find. I get, you know, Prop Wash, and I get all of these different general aviation newsletters every day. And I'll grab clips out of those things and stuff from AOPA ePilot, and I'll forward it to them. Say, hey, here's a great article. I want you to take a look at this, and let's talk about it next lesson. So every week they're getting something from me that's new, that's coming in from the plethora of sources we get of information.
So not only are you doing pre-briefings and briefing and instruction during the lessons and post-briefings, but you're doing it at home at night or in the morning.
Yeah, and you know what? When you think about it, that's part of the passion.
Right.
You know?
Right. Sure. You're interested, they're interested, and they see it. I guess your final point here, point number 11 here, is what?
It's the debrief, the power of the debrief. And so many times the flight instructor climbs out of the airplane and says, tie it down, I'll see you inside.
Wow.
Okay? And they're already telling the next student, go out and pre-flight. Okay? Where is the debrief being taken care of? Okay? I leave 30 minutes at the end of every one of my lessons for debrief. And I sit down with them, and I have a little toy airplane in my little bag of tricks.
Right.
And I pull it out, and I lay out on the desk that we're talking on. I said, here's the runway today. And I lay a pencil down. I say, here was the wind. And here's what we were doing. Now, and I start using that as a way to give them something to walk away and think about. And I found it to be a very powerful way to allow them to walk away and say, wow, I didn't think about that. It didn't make sense at the time, but now that I see that down here on the desk and with the wind and the airplane and how the wind is blowing us closer to the airport, now I can understand why I need a wind correction angle. And so there's a lot of learning that can take place there.
We've been talking with Mike Gaffney, who is an instructor extraordinaire and been working in Central Florida for several years now. And he's got the 10 or 11 tips here, and you can go back and review this again because there's an awful lot of material that we've covered here in this little session here. But I think the most important one was being passionate. That's what it's all about. And I guess I like the idea of sending emails to the students at home. Mike, it's been so great having you today. Welcome to Managing Safety. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Obie.
And this is Obie Young with Managing Safety. We'll see y'all next time. Blue skies and tailwinds to everybody.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.